So here I am, a neurologist, listening to all this. I really wanted to go through the bottom of the floor.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to episode 20 of The Alzheimer's Podcast. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Thank you for joining me for another podcast, where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Today, I'm thrilled to have Dr. Daniel Potts join me. Dr. Potts is an attending neurologist at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. He's an author, educator, and champion of those with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias and their caregivers. Inspired by his father Lester's transformation from sawmiller to watercolor artist while in the throes of dementia through person-centered care and the expressive arts, Dr. Potts seeks to make those therapies more widely available through his foundation, Cognitive Dynamics. Welcome to the show, Dr. Potts.
Mike, it's a pleasure to be with you, sir.
It's I believe you're coming to us from Alabama.
Roll Tide, absolutely. Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Ah, cool. And I'm out in San Diego. I love the technology bringing us
together.
We talked before the show. I'll call you Danny. So Danny, if you'd like to go ahead and start by sharing with our audience about why you're a dementia advocate and what inspires you to continue champion for this cause.
Well, Mike, I'll be happy to. First of all, thank you for what you do on a daily basis to raise awareness and to help those both living with these diseases and their caregivers. So hats off to you, man.
You're welcome.
For what
thank
you
you.
Do.
I appreciate that.
You know, Mike, I sort of course, trained as a neurologist, went through med school and was fascinated by neurology and went into neurology, went into practice here in Tuscaloosa in 1997. But it was to be the next few years that really set the course of my life and practice, because that's when my dad, Lester, got diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, no matter what they teach you in med school and residency, it's not enough to deal with this up close. And so over the next, you know, several years, you know, I, an only child and a neurologist, tried to help my mother, the primary caregiver, as best we could, to get dad through this and get her through this. And, you know, really, in a lot of ways, it felt like a failure. You know, I felt like a failure because I didn't recognize it soon enough. I didn't have the tools to give mother on a daily basis to help her with him. I just didn't know the caregiving as well as I should. So, you know, we walked this road, and interestingly, the breakthrough, the game changer came with Lester himself, because at a time when the world would say, oh, poor Les, you know, he's suffering with Alzheimer's, Dad showed us that he was still there by creating watercolor art. We never believed or dreamed that he had that talent. And Mike, he painted over 100 watercolors.
Oh, wow.
Over 4 years. And the man amazed us with his talent. And so he, you know, he was the inspiration for me that buoyed me through this. Just an incredible unveiling of personhood, I'll call it.
That's just an incredible story. And one we hear fairly often, I mean, that people are, you know, you come into this so untrained, so unknowing about the disease, even as an MD, and yet if you stay and you work through it and you discover these loving times together and these talents that people have.
That's right. And, you know, we're taught to seek cures and to administer medications and to treat these things, these symptoms. And we really don't have a lot of experience walking with a person through this and the caregivers. And I really look back on that as transformative for me. I'm thankful for it. I'm not thankful that he had the disease, right, but I'm thankful for the opportunity to learn and grow and become a better physician and a better person because of it. I hope that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I believe it has from I didn't know you before, but when I read your works or I hear you speak, it definitely comes through, and I think you're a great inspiration for others.
Well, I thank you. So as a caveat on that, I want to tell you kind of where I got to from now, sort of to jump ahead here. So we had Dad's art story. We were so inspired. I wrote a book about it with my poetry. Again, I had never written a poem, but because Lester painted, Danny wrote. So I wrote. We wrote a book of poetry and art. After Dad passed away, I was involved with the American Academy of Neurology's advocacy training program called the Palatucci Advocacy Leadership Forum. And so my goal was to learn how to be an advocate. You know, how do I make my voice heard? You know, how do I take this experience to another level? So I was trained. And since that time, we've started a foundation, Cognitive Dynamics, and our goal and mission is to improve quality of life by use of the expressive arts and storytelling. So that's what I'm about doing with the foundation now.
I wrote an article back with you where you brought together Cognitive Dynamics and the university into a Bringing Art to Life program. And to me, that was just an incredible merging of the two organizations.
Well, thank you. And we appreciate you writing that article and talking about the program. This is really kind of our keynote program because we feel like it combines what happened with Dad's story. And it brings in intergenerational relationships, which I think are so important, mm-hmm. and empathy growing in young people because they become friends with people who have dementia, you know, and that changes them. So they want to go out and then change the world of dementia care. So that's our primary program, and I just love doing that. It's so wonderful.
That's an incredible aspect of that program that really touched me because I was in my mid-40s before I ever felt like I had any empathy or compassion for others. And it's no fault of my own. It's just because I was never around somebody with special or unique needs to where I would be able to learn that. And I feel like a lot of our society is probably be in a similar situation. But when you're able to bring the younger generation into it and help teach them at the younger age...
Well, it has become my passion. And, you know, when we started, when I first got fresh off Dad's death, I wasn't exactly sure where I was supposed to go, what I was supposed to do. But mm-hmm. I really think now what it is, it's to use these arts-based therapies and person-centered care and education to bring people together on the same platform with the goal of building relationships, growing empathy, and bridging gaps so that we can create a culture of compassion. That's a term we throw around, but it has meaning to it for me because I've seen it work.
Yeah. Would you mind describing a little bit more about how the program brings students together with the person with Alzheimer's disease? And
yes.
I read an incredible essay that you wrote about, I believe it's called Mary's Art or something like
yes.
that.
Yes.
And if I've walked away from reading that and felt like all the students in that room that day were really touched to where you did build a culture of compassion with them that they would help spread and pay forward, if you will.
Well, Mike, what we try to do is, first of all, we educate the students weekly about Alzheimer's disease and other dementias, about the science behind it. We educate about how to communicate with people with dementia, what it may be like to live with the condition. So we put them through both simulated dementia experiences and the virtual dementia tour from okay. Second Wind Dreams. We're working with Embodied Labs in Los Angeles on a dementia module that's actually a simulated dementia experience. So we try to teach the kids as best we can about the conditions, and then we show them how art therapy works by exposing, by putting them in a situation where they do art therapy with people with dementia under the tutelage of an art therapist. And while they're in there doing that, of course, what happens is they're developing a relationship with people. And the people who are painting or creating, they begin to talk about their life story. So we all get to know each other in there. We're on the same level playing field. And to be honest with you, the kids, they fall in love with these people. I'm not overstating that. They just do. And so they don't want to, I mean, they look, Friday is their most important day of the week. They look forward to it because that's their art therapy day. And once the semester's over, most of them stay in a relationship with those individuals. They either go and visit them in their homes, they go visit them at the adult daycare, they go to church with the family, they come over and eat with them. They want to continue this relationship. And many of these kids, and this is very important, many of these kids who went into it thinking they were going to go in a different career, then choose to go into a branch of medicine or nursing or therapy or social work or whatever, where they're going to work with people with dementia. That's what they want to do after that. Wow. So it's really changing these kids in a way. And of course, it has benefits for the people with the disease and their caregivers. It provides respite. It gives people joy in the moment. You know, they sort of lose their troubles in the moment when they're with these kids and when they're painting. It has so many benefits that I think are special.
Yeah, that's just incredible, and I have to really applaud the students and yourself for you know, doing that. I believe when I was that age, I had so many other things on my mind, and I was so sheltered, and I can guarantee you that's not what my Fridays were going to be about. But, you know, I kind of, too, had a similar experience, because people ask me why I do what I do, and then they're always shocked that I don't have a loved one, or never have, that I'm aware of with dementia. And it was a similar kind of experience as once I started going into the memory care homes and meeting the people who were living with dementia and building relationships, you know, it touched my heart too. And it changed the entire path that I was on in my life. So I can understand and appreciate how it could definitely influence people on that level.
You know, it's very powerful. I ran across a quote today by Pope Francis, actually, that speaks a little bit to this. So I get up and I read the paper this morning, Mike, and I see all of this bad news, all of this, you know, the sanctity of human life. You know, we no longer have the deep appreciation for that, it seems. You know, so many shootings and so many things. And I read Pope Francis. Pope Francis says, to dare to turn what is happening to the world into our own personal suffering, and thus to discover what each of us can do about it. So this is one of the things we're trying to do with these kids, is to put them in touch with people who don't have the advantages that they have, you know, who are dealing with incredibly life altering conditions, and their caregivers, and, you know, to see themselves in that person. For a young person to see themselves in a person with Alzheimer's or another dementia or in a caregiver, hey, that has impact. That has impact. And so we have to open ourselves up to that transformation. I think the world needs more of that. I mean, I'm not saying we've cornered the market here, Mike, at all. There are a lot of great programs out there. But for me, this is what I think is going to do it in my world.
That's great to hear. And I believe you, at the time when I wrote the article, you also had another endeavor going on where it was with young, even kids even younger, almost in middle school.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
Because to me, that's where we really can, I mean, sure, of course we can make a difference at the university level, but I just always think that, boy, I wish we could make a difference even sooner.
You're exactly right, and we've done the program in high school. We've got a high school in Chicago that we've just completed a pilot, and we had the same sort of success with that. We've got a program called Let Me Be Your Memory, which is a literary based program for middle school students, where they learn about literary forms, and then they go out and capture stories. They go out and talk to their elders. Mm-hmm. They want to learn about the old stories. And they preserve them. And this does the same thing. And so it's about getting the generations together across cultural lines, ethnic lines, and just, you know, we're all one at heart. And we just got to realize that.
I sure wish that I had been led down that path when I was in middle school to, you know, take a little bit more of an interest in my grandparents at the time. And I think that those kids are going to so appreciate it down the road.
Well, I certainly hope so. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm going to write a book one of these days about my experiences with it, because it's really set me off. I really believe in this younger generation now, the millennials that really want to make a difference, you know, so we need to empower them.
That's great. And I did read the, you know, you sent me a couple of essays to read, and I was definitely Well, I was definitely pulled into them. And in one of the essays, you talk about how loss of cognitive function is not seen the same as physical ailments. And I think that's definitely one of the major hurdles that we have when trying to get society to, you know, treat people with dementia properly, is that since it's an invisible disease, and if they've never been touched by it, they can't even begin to relate to it.
You're exactly right. You know, and I think there's a stigma that's attached to dementia and Alzheimer's disease, just like there's stigma attached to mental illness. You know, it's people are ashamed to talk about it. You know, mama's not like she used to be. She's no longer, listen, she's still a person, and we got to meet her where she is. Mm-hmm. And this again goes into the culture of compassion. A part of that is addressing the stigma that's associated with these conditions.
There is a lot of stigma, and I had a lot of misunderstanding that I too had to get over and learn from when I started embracing and working more in the dementia care community. Now, one of the best ways we can do that, right, is by talking with the people with dementia and learning from them. And when I contacted you to join me on this show, I'd been wanting to ask you for several months, but then I saw a video on Facebook that you had created and shared, and I believe it was because you were inspired by people who were living with the disease when you attended the Dementia Action Alliance conference earlier in this year. So in that video, you talk about how as a healthcare provider, you need to communicate with the person with dementia in a compassionate, empathetic, and dignified way. So would you mind sharing with our audience the experience you had at the conference to lead you to that, create that video?
I'd be honored to. I was fortunate enough to go to the Dementia Action Alliance conference, the initial conference there in Atlanta this past summer. And I really found it to be a moving experience. The absolutely most transformative part came when there was a panel discussion of five people living with dementia of various kinds, moderated by G. Allen Power. The question that was posed to them that was so impressive for me was, what was it like to get the diagnosis?
Okay.
Tell us about that day. Well, without exception, each of these individuals talked about how horrendously awful the day was that they got the diagnosis in the doctor's office. And guess who were the doctors that diagnosed them? They were neurologists.
Mm.
So here I am, a neurologist, listening to all this. I really wanted to go through the bottom of the floor because I felt so embarrassed. I felt actually angry and physically ill about it. Because they said, okay, we were given a diagnosis, no one talked to us, no one looked us in the eye, no one gave us tools that we might need to live well with the diagnosis. You know, we were started on medication and told in one case to come back in a year. And in one person even said that their physician said, well, I wish you hadn't gotten the pacemaker placed. You know, if we'd known you had Alzheimer's disease, we wouldn't have recommended you get the pacemaker placed. I found it to be amazing, but I will have to say, in all fairness, that I wasn't all that surprised because, you know, physicians, and this is a whole other topic, physicians and providers are experiencing burnout at very high rates now because of the way healthcare is going, less time, less relationship building, less interaction, more computer time, more regulations, et cetera. So,
right, right.
So there are a lot of things that go into this, but I came away from this saying, what can I do? I have been in the experience as a caregiver. What can I do to help my colleagues do a better job, educate them about how to communicate with people with dementia, honor the personhood, et cetera? And so what's going to come out of that, I hope, is a presentation at the American Academy of Neurology in Los Angeles in April, in which the Dementia Action Alliance will be involved, and we'll actually have a virtual dementia experience. We'll have a panel of people with dementia talking to neurologists about this. And a partner of mine, a colleague of mine, Dr. Neelam Agarwal in Chicago at Rush University, is going to collaborate with me on this. We hope to raise awareness and education about this thing that needs to change. And again, culture of compassion in dementia care, this is part of that.
That's not the first time, only that I've heard people say come see me in 6 months, you know, here's your prescription, and we don't even know if the prescriptions are, you know, going to work for them or anything. So it's such a, horrible situation. I just not a better word for it, is there? And but I think it's great that people like you are standing up to help educate your peers and to try to make it a better experience, because until we do, people are going to avoid the diagnosis and then they're going to stay in the closet. And that's exactly the opposite of what we need to have happen.
Well, it's called pay it forward, man. And I know you know that. I know you know that concept as well.
That's true.
I've been given much, and I want to pay it forward with our experiences. But we do hope to make a difference, and you know, we hope this also addresses burnout. We want to give, you know, docs tools to be able to connect with people and to feel like they're making a difference. And I've experienced some of that myself, and I want to help along those lines too.
Sure. And so I want to picture if I go in and I get a compassionate neurologist, how would my visit maybe contrast to the way the visit would happen for, say, the pacemaker example there? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And hopefully what would happen is it would translate to a more compassionate experience from everyone you interact with there at the office, because you know, the office staff, you know, to a certain extent, feeds off of the energy that's presented to them. And so what I would hope would happen is that you're met at the window, you're communicated with by someone with a smile, you know, who speaks clearly to you so that you can understand it. And I'm speaking from the standpoint of a person with dementia.
Sure.
They talk to you like you're a human being, not that they ignore the caregiver, but you're treated as a person. You're brought back. You know, we have a layout to the office that is not confusing to someone with dementia. We don't have all sort of fleur-de-lis, you know, the designs on a carpet and that sort of stuff that's going to confuse people. We get them into exam room. We make them feel comfortable. The temperature's right. You know, we have a nurse that knows how to interact. The physician comes in and maybe says hello to the person with dementia before they say anything to anybody else.
Right.
You know, hello, Mrs. Jones. How are you doing? I'm so glad to see you today. You know, rather than not acknowledging she's there.
Right.
And then, you know, speak at eye level, speak slowly. You know, all of these things that we can train people how to do and to have empathy. Now, after the diagnosis, maybe this is the day you get the diagnosis. So after you deliver the diagnosis, you can do it in a compassionate way that is then followed up with, you know, we want to give you tools, Mrs. Jones, to help you live well with this diagnosis that's like any other diagnosis. It's like maybe diabetes. It's like congestive heart failure. We've got some tools, and my social worker or my nurse is going to come in and going to talk to you and your caregiver about some options that you have. Here's the number for the Alzheimer's Association, the Alzheimer's Foundation. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the number for the Dementia Action Alliance. We're going to get you set up with an occupational therapist. We've got adult daycare options. All of this. That needs to be available in the office.
Exactly.
And so you know, it needs to be a multi. It's a collaborative experience that's going to wind up helping this person live well with the condition.
That sounds like a great vision. And I, what I'm thinking of, and I've never experienced it, but I feel like our culture, society went through the same thing with cancer, where patients were kind of ushered in and out, and then it took a while, but eventually we got to this level of compassion where they get a social worker after their diagnosis. They get that help they may need from a therapist or something to deal with it, but they're supported along the entire journey.
I think you're right. I think ageism plays a role here too.
Okay.
That's part of it. There's stigma there. I think that, you know, mental illness in general, people that have conditions that affect the brain and affect the cognition, there's a stigma that's born by society. And I just, you know, there are a lot of things to work on, but you're exactly right. And there are companies out there that train physicians and office staff about how to interact with someone with cancer and to have end of life conversations. And, you know, I think we need to do some of those same sorts of things in the world of dementia.
It sounds like a good plan. I don't know if this is true, but I heard that when you go to medical school, you get taught about dementia in probably less than a one-hour class, and that's about it.
Yeah, and I think they're doing a little bit better than that now, and they're also trying to teach med students and residents how to break bad news to people. But
okay. But
there's still not enough. There's not enough resources put into that, and we'd love to see more.
And I think it kind of goes also back to how when you put the like the university students together with the person with dementia, you know, there's book smarts, of course, and then there's actual the real life experience of of being and building a relationship with somebody where that empathy really comes out, because I don't think you can get the empathy from a book, right? So you might want to and have the heart to, but until you really sit there with the person, I think that'd be kind of hard. But so maybe that's also something that needs to kind of be done a little bit more.
I think it is. We'd love to see med schools take the lead here, mm-hmm. and actually even pair up, you know, kids from high schools that may be at risk kids, you know, pair them up with medical school students and go into a nursing home and have programs where they all go into a nursing home and, you know, do art activities with individuals or take life stories with individuals, that sort of thing. And I think it would be good for everybody.
It does sound good for everybody. So do you want to share anything else from that conference?
I just enjoyed interacting with people whose goal it is to help people live well, mm-hmm. and to create a dementia-friendly society. And I'm very much a backer of the dementia-friendly American dementia-friendly programs that are teaching everybody in the workplace, from, you know, civic engagement, you know, retail, how do we treat people in a compassionate way and with deference and kindness and respect. I really enjoyed interacting with those people. Mm-hmm. And hey, it's really made me more aware, I think. Hopefully it has.
So I think it probably has. And I hope some of those conferences start coming out my way so I can get it in attendance.
Well, you're already doing that sort of thing in a big way by your podcast and your other venues. So
I do so enjoy talking with people and learning that way. So, well, believe it or not, we're coming up at the end of our 30 minutes. So, Daniel, Danny, is there anything else as we wrap up that you'd like to share, any resources or last bits of advice?
Our website, www.cognitivedynamics.org, that's our foundation website. You'll find some information there about our programs. We do have a training program called Cognitive Connections that's run by Angel Duncan, who is a very, very well-known art therapist. So we will come and train you or your staff. If you're in an assisted living facility, or if you're just a group of interested individuals, we'll train you on art therapy techniques so that you'll be able to use those. You won't be an art therapist after that, but you'll have the tools you'll need to do some of the things we're talking about. And let's all get on board together here, join hands. You know, we're all about cure. We want to support research. We want these conditions to be cured, but we're also about care and creating a culture of compassion and dementia care, helping people live well with the diagnosis. And we're all in this together, man.
We are. I agree with everything you said and fully support it. So thank you, Danny, and thank you to our audience for joining us today. That was a great discussion on creating a culture of compassion from the younger kids all the way through the medical professionals. So be sure to check out the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode20, where you'll find a link to all the resources Danny mentioned, as well as anything else we mentioned. So, and one thing I think he said, Danny, was remember to accept, adapt, and affirm.
Amen, brother. That's exactly right. No denial in this room.
No denial. All right. Bye now.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.